Welcome, everyone, to today's episode of the Be Freaking Awesome podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Sammy Kinnison, joined by Angela Belford. Today, we're going to continue our series of Syndrome or Superpower, and we're going to be talking a little bit more about ADHD / ADD, as it was formerly referred to. We'll use probably both terms interchangeably throughout, so be patient with us. Angela, do you want to kick us off with just some of your, warm-up thoughts on the subject of ADD and Syndrome or Superpower?
Yeah, I'll warm up, but then you may have to like pump my brakes because I can get wound up on this topic. So this journey begins many, many moons ago. I was a consultant for a client, and part of my consulting statement of work was that I would, over a two-year period, provide Microsoft Office training for everyone on staff. So I had to assess the staff to see, did they need Outlook? Everyone had to have Outlook. And then did they need Word, Excel, PowerPoint? And so that means I touched literally over a two-year period was with everyone on staff. And this one particular meeting, I can't remember which of the Office products I was teaching, and there was a person in the class, and she said, Angela, you have ADD. And I laughed, ha ha ha, and thought it was a joke because I can't have ADD because I could go into like crazy intense hyperfocus. This was back in my early 30s when this was happening. And so I got to be friends with, one of my friend's husbands and I were chatting one day, and he said, I don't even know what we're talking about. He was known to have ADD. And he said, oh, one of the things about ADD is that you can go into this like crazy hyper-focus and like the whole world goes away. And I was like, whoa. I mean, like literally time slowed down for me for a second because I was like, no, that proves that I don't have ADD. And he goes, oh, no, that's kind of the thing. It's sort of an all or nothing. And like, I was like, you mean when I'm like working and then my kids come and be like, Mom, can I have, some food? I want a snack. And I would be like, what do you want? And so I was still a consultant with that client. And so I called up the staff member and I said, when you said that about me last year, were you joking? And she goes, Angela, I was a principal for 12 years. My job was to be on the committee of people who assessed children that had been recommended by teachers. There was the school counselor. There was me. I've had extensive training on how to diagnose people with ADD. No, that was not a joke. And I was just like, oh my goodness. So while I have talked to some people who have gone through and done like the large investment to get officially tested, and they tell me all about how wonderful and amazing that is, this was how I was diagnosed with it. And immediately I was introduced to a book by Tom Hartman called ADD, A Different Perspective, which he has since revised and updated and is now called ADHD, A Hunter in a Farmer World, is what it's called. And we'll put the link in there. And what I appreciated about Tom's perspective is that he says, the only reason why you're labeled with the disorder is because you live in an agrarian society. Now, further research I have done would say that actually farmers have to balance a lot of different things, and that actually it's because we live in an industrial society. And if you look at the history of our public school system, that was designed by the Industrial Revolutionists to get people accustomed to sitting still for 8 hours a day. That as a farmer, you're actually having to juggle lots of different things. And so but his analogy works beautifully, the plant the crops, row the crops, and there's just a methodicalness to the planting and farming process. And so I immediately latched on to, I ain't nothing broke about this. I start all of my training now and say, some of you may wonder if I have ADD, if I suffer from ADD. I do not suffer from it. I enjoy every minute of it and hope you will too. So that's kind of how this journey began, and really have been thinking a lot about how combination of people either not realizing that they probably have ADD or ADHD, and or if you can embrace this idea that this is how your brain works, it doesn't have to be this like horrible thing. No intention whatsoever to discount anyone's experience. I want to validate how your brain works in our society is an ass. It's hard. And you have to have some good coping skills.
So is it safe to say superpower or syndrome? You say superpower.
I say if you have the right attitude, the right mindset, it absolutely can be your syndrome. It can be your superpower. I think undiagnosed, unaware, unintentional. Of course, y'all know, writing a couple books about living an intentional life. So I think any effort that you have to not live an intentional life is going to be kind of a little bit more messy experience, in my opinion. So it can certainly be detrimental, but I'm going to say be intentional. It can be your superpower.
Okay. I'll share a little bit about sort of my interactions, experience with ADHD. What's funny sometimes is that I definitely also have ADHD symptoms and tendencies. I think on like the spectrum of ADHD, I'm not pretty intense on it, but definitely on the ADHD spectrum for sure. My husband is as well. And there was a period of time where, as one does, you get your algorithm on the TikToks or Instagram figures out that this is something that you might relate to. And I remember seeing some different videos and it was like, these are like, you know, signs or symptoms of ADHD. And I was like, no, it's not. That's just normal human things and interactions. And I would show it to Chris and be like, do you think this is an ADHD thing? Like, I don't think so. I think it's just a normal human thing. And he'd be like, oh yeah, 100%, just a normal human thing. That's not ADHD at all. And it took us a while. There was some video that I then showed to another friend. It was like, yeah, this is just normal human thing. And she goes, what are you talking about? That's definitely not a normal human thing. I don't experience that at all. And that was about the point that I clued in that Chris and I are a bad control group when looking at things, when both of us have similar issues and similar ways that we deal with ADHD. Anyway, that was very entertaining to see how we are a bad control group.
I can remember because, and I wish I could remember exactly what year it was, and I probably could dig and figure it out, but I remember having conversations with you when you were like 10 to 13 or 14, and sometimes you would just get so frustrated, like, why can't I remember whatever? How come I keep losing whatever? How come blah, blah, blah? And you would just be so upset. And next week we'll talk about perfectionism. But I can remember saying to you, Sammy, this is how your brain works. Some people would label you with ADD. However, we are creative types. We see connections that other people don't see. Your brain is a beautiful place. And you are going to have to develop coping skills, because to live in our society, and I probably broke it down hopefully in a more tangible and a consumable way, but in our society, you will have to develop coping skills. That means you are going to have to make lists of things. That means you're going to find a home for your keys. That means you're going to have to figure out how this shows up for you. And you're going to have to figure out some ways. So those of you that know Sammy will know that she is rarely caught without a journal in her hand. And that is because she writes down everything she has. I can't remember. How many journals are you up to now?
12.
Because like you that. Have continued to keep a journal.
If you're watching this on video, you can see that I literally just pulled it from right off screen. Yeah, it's volume 14 is the one I'm working on right now. It was within arm's reach from where I am currently recording the podcast.
And Sammy also convinced me in the last 5 years that having a journal, one journal where everything is a great place. You can caveat your journal experience in a second, but anyway, and then I got real into bullet journal for a while because bullet journal is actually a great coping skill for people, those of us with ADD.
Yeah, I think on my journaling experience, one of the things I've encountered when people ask me, well, how are you so consistent with journaling? I don't have a lot of rules about it. I do not journal every day. I don't have, this is the only structure. I put my grocery list down. I put my prayer. I write angry letters to my husband when I'm mad at him. Literally anything is in my journal. And I also am extremely private about my journal. What's interesting, I think a lot of people would say that I'm a very open and vulnerable person. And I would agree with that. Very open about my life experiences online, in person, whichever. My journal is my journal. And very rarely do I let people see inside the journal. I think my husband of almost 7 years has written in my journal twice because it was something like, no, I need you to write this list for me and I'm driving or something like that. Like he doesn't really get to see inside the journal very often. Also because I write angry letters to him sometimes, which I obviously don't show him, but yeah, it's just helpful to be like, you're a jerk and write it out and move on. So,
well, and we're getting into coping skills before we fully diagnose the problem. Well, welcome to the ADD episode. One of the things you mentioned was on the spectrum of people with ADD. And I think we are eventually going to figure out that there's no such thing as neurotypical and there's no such thing as normal, that it is all just a spectrum of neurodiversity. For those of you that, you know, get nerded out on the neuroscience, ADHD is considered part of the same spectrum that people are on for autism and for those more intense neurodiverse experiences. And so there's some tendencies that we have, those of us with ADHD, and that sometimes we resonate. And I'm like, yes, well, that's because we're all on the same spectrum. So what do you think, Sammy? Do you think it's superpower?
So I think, obviously, I'm not 100% either way, but if I had to give it a split, I think it's like 65% syndrome, 35% superpower. I think that it is more typical. Maybe that's not even the right word. I don't know. I think if you have a more extreme or more intense experience with ADHD, it really is a lot to overcome and it can be a big hindrance to people around you. I have a really good friend whose husband has ADHD and it very negatively impacts their life and they can't make plans very far out because that's too much for him to experience having plans that the day of he may not feel like it. And so cancel the plans. And there's just been watching her experience of being a spouse to somebody with ADHD can really, now granted, like I'm a friend that somebody that my friend comes to rant to. So there are also like the beautiful and good sides of this, but I also get to hear a lot of the downsides and a lot of the, this is really, really hard to live with when you aren't both experiencing this at the same time. And when your brains aren't working in the same way, it can really cause a lot of conflict. I also have big issues with the way that women are underdiagnosed with ADHD, especially children. There's this societal soapbox moments or anybody, you know, just to prep you. Women in our society are conditioned that you need to be like neat, perfect little boxes and do all these good things. And, you know, if you're not behaving or performing well, fix it, make it better. There's not a whole lot of like, okay, well, how can we help you? And how can we make this better? And so women and like girls are underdiagnosed very dramatically. And I think that is because we have a societal pressure of figure it out. boys, it's acceptable for them to forget their homework every day. Ah, he's got ADHD. Like, what are you going to do? And girls, like, it's just not treated. They're not treated the same, in my opinion, in my experience. And I think that girls often just get the short straw, and that you have to develop coping skills faster and you have to do more of it on your own, versus there's going to be a lot more grace given for guys, even like, oh, that's just how boys are. They're just forgetful. And there's different elements of it that boys get a pass and girls don't. Girls don't get a pass to just, you know, you have to figure it out. You really have to buckle down. And anyway, there's some research around it that specifically, like, girls are less often to get prescribed medicine for it. They're more often to be told, well, you know, keep a journal, keep an agenda, and figure out your coping skills, then come back and we'll talk about medicine. Whereas it's like, oh, well, I can't expect this, you know, 10-year-old boy to keep an agenda. So let's try other skills right away. Medicine is a whole nother topic, because I do think that that's a pretty intimate decision between your care team, yourself, especially with children and parents. And I don't like that it is not on the table sooner for people who need it, for girls who need it. So soapbox over, I think, until I come back around to it.
Sure. Well, you talked about all the things that aren't tolerated among girls. Let's talk about some of the main symptoms of ADHD. And I actually have a sort of follow-up, and this list that, okay, there's a great resource called Attitude Magazine, ADDITUDE, Inside the ADHD Mind. It is super fantastic. You should definitely subscribe. It's, I think, $25 a year. It's a great resource. So they have, so this list of main symptoms of ADHD, it's not comprehensive. It's not that everybody has all of these. And there's going to be a couple of things that are in it that I'm going to be like, ha ha, this is what one of my theories of this is. So short attention span, especially for non-preferred tasks, hyperactivity, which could be physical, verbal, or emotional, impulsivity, which may manifest as recklessness, fidgeting or restlessness, disorganization and difficulty prioritizing tasks, poor time management, time blindness, frequent mood swings, emotional dysregulation, trouble multitasking and executive dysfunction, inability to control anger or frustration, trouble completing tasks, frequent procrastination, distractibility, difficulty awaiting turn. And maybe we should put those in the show notes with this, because it's a pretty extensive list with lots of multiple syllable words. So those of us that have ADD probably got tuned out about five topics in. One of the things that I want to say is that there is growing research that says there is a really strong correlation between childhood trauma and ADHD, specifically prolonged trauma, from the standpoint of, if you are in a constant dysregulated state, means you are in a constant fight or flight as a child, then it really impacts your brain function and it impacts the decision-making parts of your brain. And so what I have seen personally over the last 2 years is, as I have worked on my nervous system and completing some of those emotional cycles, having less emotional dysregulation, my ADD symptoms have improved dramatically. I feel like I was already coping pretty well. And there are things that just aren't as hard as they used to be. And so sometimes it could be that these ADD symptoms are like post-traumatic stress responses too. And so, yeah, I'm going to link everything to the nervous system. So it could be that if you do experience some of these things, you may not be full-blown ADHD, but it could be an indicator light and a red flag for you to go, ooh, maybe this is something else. A symptom that's not on this list that I've recently become aware of is lying And it is often an ADD, a person that experiences ADD, they're working really hard to get themselves out of trouble. And so they say whatever they need to say to appease the person, to really try to get their nervous system back in response. And so they agree to things, or they say they did things that they didn't actually do. They meant to do it. They had good intentions. And I did not realize that that was an indicator light.
I think that also falls a little bit under the impulsivity, in the not thinking through the whole consequences of what you say. You know, there's something about the impulse, the gut impulse, like don't be in trouble. Don't be found out. Get the situation diffused, move on as fast as you can. There's, you know, that impulse control.
Yeah, for sure.
So what do you do about it? Speaking of, we talked a little bit about coping skills and coping strategies. Even just in reflecting on some of the symptoms, what's interesting to me is that I would not consider myself a disorganized person. And I think that is because I have had to become hyper-organized, because my brain is not necessarily predispositioned to just organize things. And I really have to, I have spent pretty much a decade, more than a decade, building this skill so that it becomes a habit that I keep things organized. I don't know. There's different things like that that it's not necessarily helpful in the coping skills. Like, what can you do tomorrow about this? But there's also...
Well, I think some of it, though, I remember there was a book that I listened to about ADHD in women, because it does show up. It does look different as well. And one of the things that really resonated with me is the person said, I am a PhD in something like really intense, but I do not know how to organize my closet. Like, I literally look at this giant mess and I can't even figure out what I'm supposed to do. I can remember saying, oh my gosh, I really resonate with that. And my friend who's not ADD went, you put them in color order, and then you put all the colors together, all the short sleeve, long sleeve. Like, it's easy. What do you mean you don't know how to organize your closet? And I'm like, oh, what a great idea. And so that little tip helped me to go, oh, I'm going to at least put all my colors of my clothes together. Cause then you're like lost constantly that you can't find the clothing that you want. And so it was great to have somebody else who, on this book, that was just crazy smart, but that something basic, like getting your clothes closet organized. Cause I do think there is a high propensity of people that have ADHD and ADD, they are often really, really, really smart. One of my favorite things about my brain is I see connections where other people don't see them. And so, and that's the hunter scanning the horizon. And so sometimes it's detrimental if I like am trying to introduce people for networking and I'm like, oh, you two need to know each other. And they'll be like, why? And I'm like, well, it seems so obvious to me. And they're like, what about this do you see that's obvious? And so I will have to say, you serve XYZ client and you have XYZ skills. You serve the same client, but you have ABC skills. So those are complementary. So you guys can pass referrals to each other. Oh, we never even saw that connection. That happens a lot. So there's oftentimes people that have ADHD are more likely to be in creative professions because they do scan the horizon and kind of see the connections. On the topic of medication, I love how Tom Hartman handles it, because he used a great example of it depends on what you need. So there was somebody that was a creative director in a marketing agency. Obviously, I love this story. And the guy was struggling with his ADHD. He started taking medication. He couldn't do his job because he didn't see connections. He wasn't seeing the creativity. He was very calm, but he couldn't do the creative parts of his job. So that person was able to get a faster acting medication that he only took on billing days. So on the days that he had to bill, and he needed to put all the invoices together. He took his ADHD medication. He sat still. He didn't plan client meetings on those days. And he figured out that was how his work life worked for him. And that was how medication worked for him.
I don't take medication for ADHD, but I do take medication for anxiety. And so this is, say that like it's a tangent kind of experience, a little bit different. I started this last May, and there's something about it that, one, I think definitely having to find like the right medication for the right things that you have going on is really important. Mm-hmm. For me and in my experience, what my anti-anxiety medicine has been able to do, it cuts the edge of things where I have more brain processing power to respond and to even build coping skills. And I think that that can be true for other people, that when you're staring at your closet and you have no idea how to start, and then you're stuck there, and then like, that's it. Can't go do something else because this is the task you're doing. Can't figure out how to start. So you're just stuck there. I have been stuck in that loop before. Having something like, sometimes, you know, if the pain is too much, you can't even start working out after an injury. Like you can't start that, like stretching those muscles if it's still too intense. And finding something that can, if it's needed, cut the edge, bring it down a little bit so that you have some space to breathe. We frequently use metaphors around here, not uncommon to that, but it's like your computer. And if you have sort of just the RAM and the CPU capacity, something, you got a program running in the background, if it's taking up all of your RAM, you can't do the basic things sitting in front of you. Whereas if you can figure out how to reduce that load, it gives you more opportunity to address that.
My friend that, this is sort of on the coping skills thing, my friend that told me about the hyperfocus with ADHD, he was sharing that the reason why often people with ADHD drink a lot of caffeine is because normal brain, air quotes for those of you that are listening and not watching, normal brain might run at 100 miles an hour. And so caffeine amps you up to like 250, for instance. ADHD brains, ADD brains run at about 700 miles an hour. And so caffeine dials you in at about 250 to 300 miles an hour. So it actually can slow your brain down just a little bit. And like, I can have problems sleeping if I take caffeine too late in the day, but I don't have the experience of being like, woo, I'm so amped up over the, you know, if I just had caffeine. I have a very consistent caffeine regimen where I've found an energy drink that works for me, that has lots of vitamins, and that doesn't have the crash and no sugar and all of those things. So it's very clean, but it is a very consistent routine. And I find that that is, for me, that is my medication, essentially.
Your drug of choice.
It is. And it works for me. And that's not at all to say that I never need medication. And there are, I kind of want to go back to your friend that whose husband, that they struggle with it. I know a little bit of that story. And it seems like there's an element of it that the friend's husband isn't really taking it that seriously. And it doesn't seem like. So I think that's when it can become an actual syndrome and a disorder, is that if you have zero regard for how it is impacting the people around you, I don't think that's an intentional way to live in your life. And I personally am going to advocate that if the way your brain works, this is not a cop-out. This is not a sucks to suck. I'm just like this. It's like, how can you build in methods to accommodate the way your brain works? Similar to if you had a physical limitation, you would accommodate that without being just 100% inconsiderate of how the way your brain works and what's going on with you impacts other people. And so if you're like, I've developed all my coping skills, I've gone to therapy, I take medication, and still this is kind of a deal breaker for me. I noise pollution, like if things get too loud and too rowdy, it can really activate my nervous system. And I know this. And so we've talked about, I think you're in a similar boat. You have a cool strategy for that. You want to share what you do for the noise pollution in your life?
Oh, I put in my noise canceling headphones and listen to beach sounds.
Mm-hmm.
I try really hard to find steps before this, because especially with small children, it's not always ideal to just like, okay, I'm not going to listen to anybody and do anything, but it'll be like, okay, we're going to go watch your favorite TV show and you're going to watch it with headphones. I have bought 3 different pairs of wireless headphones because the first two were just pretty low quality and broke, but I need, it's a coping skill for me, for my 4-year-old to be able to sit in front of the tablet and watch some TV, and I can put in my noise canceling headphones and take some deep breaths and calm down when things get too much. So I do that. Before I go to stressful situations, my husband will ask, do you have your headphones? Sometimes it's like, stop asking me if I have my headphones. I'll be fine. Like, don't bother. Like, no, it's fine. Yes, I do have them, but don't poke me about it. Anyway. And then other times I'm like, oh yeah, I definitely need those. Like, great call. Let me make sure I have them. So that's one of my coping skills for too much noise.
Mm-hmm.
I also, too much mess can sometimes be tricky for me.
Visual clutter is a big trigger for me.
I am not afraid of the shove it in the closet method, because something about, like, you got to cut the edge before you can actually address it. And so, yes, would a more ideal solution be, well, just clean the entire house and put everything exactly where it belongs? Sure. Can't get my body to do that because it's too dirty to clean. So anyway, what are our takeaways for today, Angela? I feel like, you know, like you prefaced, a little bit of an ADHD conversation. What do we hope people walk away with?
I would say I'm going to beat my same drum. Be intentional. Understand yourself. Work on your self-awareness. Don't be afraid of medication. If you need it, don't beat yourself up. Like, none of this should be used as a mechanism to beat yourself up. Just learn, these are some of the idiosyncrasies of my brain. Celebrate those, make friends with, and it's just part of the journey.
I like it. I would say for me, a takeaway I hope people walk away with is that change takes time. Learning coping skills takes time. It's probably not going to be an overnight fix, but practicing at it and going after it over and over again, even when you fall off the wagon, even whenever things don't quite work out, that consistency to come back can make a big difference. And who knows, maybe you'll be at volume 14 of journaling in no time. Thanks everybody for joining us today. Hope you have enjoyed this conversation about syndrome or superpower and ADHD. Until next time, we hope you go and be freaking awesome.
Sorry, I just had a moment where I was like, you are now on video. You have to stop constantly moving.
I noticed that earlier and didn't know how to tell you, stop moving. Maybe you should sit down so you stop.
I forget. This is not very many episodes in of us being on video. So thank you for that, Grace.